Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to my channel. And in this video, I'm commenting about the North Atlantic Treaty Organization having its latest Secretary General. So the former Prime Minister of Norway held that office for 10 years. And Mr. Stoltenberg, he has retired from that position. And it was thought it must be led by someone who's been a previous head of government. There had been speculation that Ben Wallace, the erstwhile British Defence Secretary, would allow his name to go forward for this office, but that's not true. I think he stepped down from the UK Parliament, so he's no longer in public life. There was some debate, should it go to a woman? No female has ever held that office. Should it go to someone from Eastern Europe? Because, of course, these Eastern European countries only managed to join NATO from the late 90s onwards. Having someone from a former Soviet country like Latvia, Lithuania, or Estonia, that would really send a signal of very new NATO countries like Sweden and Finland, only joined over the last 2 years. That would underscore that NATO is moving east and really give the two fingers to the Kremlin. But no, they went for Mark Rutte, pale, male, stale. But perhaps we shouldn't pay so much attention to demographics. Is he a safe pair of hands? Some people would say he's been a fairly successful prime minister of the Netherlands. He's led his country for a decade. And like most Dutchmen, he's well over 6 foot tall, spare, and speaks flawless English, but with an unmistakable Nederlands accent. So it's a 5-year term initially, and it is renewable. I don't think there is any term limits, but methinks no one's ever held it for more than 5 years. I mean, who else has had it? Lord Robinson of Britain held it in the early noughties. Lord Carrington, the former British Defence Secretary, was it in the mid-80s after he stood down? Sorry, former British Foreign Secretary held it for a few years. So here we have Mark Rutte. So Mr. Rutte said that he doesn't think that there's any new threat from Russia in terms of nuclear weapons. There's always been some threat, but, you know, that's not elevated. This is really just drivel from Putin to distract from his battlefield failures. I mean, having said that, Russia actually has made some progress around Vuhledar. They call it by some other name. But Russia's only advanced about 50 kilometers since February at the cost of tens of thousands of deaths, you know, and maybe 100,000 wounded in that time quite easily. It's estimated that Russia's battlefield death, about 130,000 since the war began. That's a conservative estimate since February 2022, and about triple that number wounded, about 390,000 wounded. So sort of well over 500,000 killed or wounded, a couple of thousand are prisoners now. Some of whom were captured whilst wounded. People are saying that Russia's sustaining up to 1,000 casualties a day. I'm skeptical. I think it's more like half that. It did cross my mind, it's all very well Ukraine striking into Russia and they hit some oil facilities and they do some economic damage. But if they put all their munitions, all their drones and missiles against Russian troops in Ukraine, the casualties might get so high, up to about 2,000 a day, even then just Russia wouldn't be able to sustain that. So we just can't draft enough people. We're not going for general mobilization. We're going to have to scale back our attacks. And the Russian troops in Vuhledar already. Ukraine's withdrawing from it. They've not formally announced that the fall of Vuhledar, but, you know, so this is maybe before some people come, you know, they're definitely within the next week, Russia have total control of that town. It's a bit sooner than some people anticipated. The Russians made some strenuous efforts to capture in 2022 and indeed 2023. So this is a Russian victory, but you know, a Pyrrhic victory, not quite as bad as Avdiivka and Bakhmut. But the big question is, what happens next? Does Russia actually speed up? But the Rasputitsa is coming. You know, the very muddy season of heavy rains, the latter half of October into early February, early November, you know, it snows by late November when it's frozen, and then advances can begin. So Russia, I suppose, was desperate to capture it now because they've got about a week before, you know, be inundated. And it's very difficult to make significant progress then. You're sinking and slipping in the mud, and certainly vehicles can scarcely go off-road because it's just so muddy. So the signals, no change of tack from Mark Rutte. He gave a press conference when he took over the job on the 1st of October. So, and he said he affirmed that Ukraine is absolutely legally entitled to attack inside Russian territory. But it's a matter for each NATO member state whether they choose to permit Ukraine to use the weapons they furnished to strike into Russia or not. But he says, you know, the more help for Ukraine, the better. And the more arms we give them, the sooner it'll be ended. And that's true. I mean, this war would have been over already, might never have started if NATO had doubled down and given the weapons they wanted. That Kursk, this at the Kerch Strait Bridge could have been brought down on the first day and so on, right? And Rutte observed that the cost of supporting Ukraine is far, far lower than we cost, the cost we face if we allow Putin to get his way. Because if Ukraine does fall, it shan't be the last victim of Russia. They're already illegally occupying some of Moldova since 1991. They're already illegally occupying some of Georgia since 1991. They might annex those countries totally. Then they could test the resolve of NATO. And what they do is they already do it, but they do it by an inch at a time, violating your airspace further and further, violating your territorial waters, your land. They've already carried out murders of civilians, NATO citizens in NATO countries, like Alexander Litvinenko, 2006 in London, like Sergei Skripal. They tried to murder him. They actually murdered another British woman who they weren't actually trying to kill, but they nevertheless, that's transferred malice. They're just as guilty of that one, and so on. Espionage operations, but like burning down warehouses, blowing up a warehouse in the Czech Republic several years ago, which two security guards were murdered. So Russian state terrorism is active. In foreign countries, the murder of a Georgian citizen who was in Berlin several years ago. So they would simply, you know, intensify that sort of gray zone warfare. Would they try and cut various cables, blow up pipelines? So they mean us harm. There's no two ways about it. So, but if they do win in Ukraine, that'll be a big fillip to their morale. They have a lot of military assets they can use elsewhere and things like that. Putin wants to rebuild the old Tsarist Empire, so he would attack all sorts of NATO countries. And obviously, he's very much in thrall to countries which are extremely anti-Western regimes like Iran, North Korea, and so forth. He's been driven closer to this in the last few years, or he's chosen to be by his hyper-aggressive policies. Anyway, Mark Rutte acknowledged that it's a tough situation for Ukraine, not as bad as it was, you know, earlier this year, but, you know, there's big arms shipments and that money is going to run out. So it has to be increased. So Mark Rutte said that, you know, Russia's losing 1,000 troops a day, killed or wounded. Again, methinks that's propaganda. But anyway, it calls for NATO not to expand, but to improve relations with countries in other parts of the world. Now, Donald Trump may well come back as president, could be inaugurated on the 20th of January 2025. I'm giving that about a 45% chance. And remember, he's got notoriously attached relationship with NATO, has thought aloud about the United States withdrawing from NATO and so forth. And if Article 5 were invoked, he wouldn't necessarily come to the aid of a NATO country. One of the things that Trump said, which I have to say he was spot on, is most NATO countries don't pay their way. They're supposed to give at least 2% of GDP, and few of them did. Now, they've mostly increased that. You know, Germany's budget doubled its defense budget since the Ukraine war, and Poland's well above 2%. The UK's about 2.5% now, was one of the very few to meet the 2% target. The United States was at 6% for a very long time. So why should the United States carry all the load and these Europeans get a free ride? But anyway, if Kamala Harris wins, it'll be a lot easier for NATO. So the Netherlands is now at 2%. So this 57-year-old Mark Rutte, he could well serve 10 years. He's a deeply uninteresting person, but Jens Stoltenberg was as well. I suppose nobody really dislikes him. But long gone are the days when President Emmanuel Macron of France could say that NATO was brain dead. You know, Sweden and Finland joining, obviously Ukraine clamoring to get in. Others want to join. Could there be expansion into Southeast Europe again? Would Serbia join one day? Switzerland, there's no talk of it. Austria, there's no talk of it, really. And so how about Kosovo, Republic of Ireland? More people in the Republic, we're talking about it now than used to be. You know, Malta, no. Cyprus, no, because it's partly under illegal occupation by a NATO member, and that is Turkey. All right. Well, thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.